Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our review positionally of the Ravens in 2022. Today, we're going to talk about the Ravens tight end group and our good friend Josh Reed joining us for that discussion. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. I'd love to talk about the position of the tight end. It's one of the ones that's very near and dear to my heart.
Josh, you don't remember, is living the dream in Anchorage, Alaska. Got his own gig as a sports writer out there. A lot of high school coverage for your what you do?
Yeah, I actually do a lot of high school, a lot of college, a lot of amateur hockey, junior hockey. So we have an NAHL team up here, North American Hockey League, Anchorage Wolverines, that I cover quite a bit. Then I got the University of Alaska Anchorage, all their sports teams. And then, a lot of high school stuff.
All right. Well, sounds good. Got to thank our sponsor here, Liquid Death, the water that will brutally murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been good to us. Let's start, Josh, with what I think is kind of the big story of the tight end group this year. There's a couple. Obviously, one of the things I've talked about ad nauseum so far this year on the pod has been how heavy the Ravens have played. And it's the heaviest offense in a relative sense, I believe, in NFL history. In an absolute sense, it's so far different from the next closest team. I think you'd have to go back decades to find the last team that played as many heavies per play, or maybe stated differently, as few wide receivers per play. And the main beneficiary of that was this very deep tight end group.
Yeah, and as we all know, it's kind of by necessity given all their injuries at wide receiver. You know, you come into this season expecting Rashad Bateman to be your guy and the Devin Duvernay to be your complimentary guy, and then by the end of the season, both of those guys are gone, and then you're forced to turn to the corpse of Sammy Watkins and DeMarcus Robinson as your top two receivers by the end of the year. So, you know, why not lead into your talented group of tight ends? Because honestly, this is the deepest group they've had since 2019.
Yeah, it certainly is outstanding. We're going to go through them one at a time here. Of course, the Ravens drafted two new tight ends in the fourth round, something they've done several times before, to draft two tight ends, and seems to be the second guy always works out better. Pitta over Dixon, mm-hmm. and Andrews over Hurst.
And now, Boyle over Williams.
Boyle over Williams. That's a good one. I kind of forgotten that one. And now, of course, we don't know yet, but Isaiah Likely got more playing time than Charlie Kolar did this year. Both of them, honestly, to me, seem to be on the right track, but Kolar may be a little bit behind developmentally.
Yeah, I'm counting me in the contingent of people that are rarely perplexed and somewhat upset that Kolar wasn't active for that playoff game. I just didn't really get that one, man. I mean, just like what value is a guy like James Prochet bringing to you that you haven't already seen? I mean, you could have somebody else back there catching punts or fair catching punts. You know, like you should have your most skilled pass catchers, you know, on the field and active, even if it means lining up a tight end at receiver, you know, in certain plays, because most tight ends now, or at least the way that the Ravens should have been using those guys this year, as like de facto wide receivers. So I was a little miffed about Cole, especially after what he showed in that Week 18 game against the Bengals, and for him to be a healthy scratch was just like, I don't know, I didn't like it.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I want to talk about him a little bit, but let's talk about Mark Andrews first, if you don't mind. A guy played hurt, in my opinion, for much of the season, but was still the Ravens' leading receiver. Definitely wasn't the same Mark Andrews they'd been in previous years.
No, that was a knee injury, correct? That was kind of nagging him throughout the year. When you play a position like that, especially as hard and as gritty, as much attention as a guy like Mark Andrews does have, that does play with, you know, a knee injury can be very debilitating. And you can see he just wasn't as explosive, you know, in my opinion, I think me and you've talked about this a couple of times on other podcasts. You know, he hasn't looked as explosive as fast since he did his rookie year. He had quite a few breakaway run after catch opportunities. Mm-hmm. But even in the years since, he's still, you know, been able, you know, to pull away and get more consistent separation at the top of his routes than he had this past year. So that knee injury was clearly bothering him. But by the end of the year, you know, you could tell he was kind of like rounding back in the form and looking like his old self there.
Yeah, his yards per target took another drop this year down to 7.5, which was not good. The lowest passer rating throwing to him of his career at, 90.8. So those are PFR numbers, so Pro Football Reference, kind of the normal encyclopedia site. In 2021, there were 9 interceptions on balls targeting. That dropped to only 3 in 2022, so there are other elements of his game that really fell off. And most notably, his last touchdown of the season came in week 6. Mark Andrews was he disappeared the last 11 weeks of the year, and he's one of the reasons why the Ravens didn't have a lot of receiving touchdowns this season.
Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument that the entire offense dropped off after that first month and a half of the season, Ken. I mean, honestly, it just, for the second year in a row, we're talking about all these numbers dropping, and then that, but at the same time, your offense is going through kind of somewhat, I wouldn't say identity crisis, but like identity shift, because like I said, those injuries at receiver, you're really banking on those guys to not just produce, but be healthy. And then once they weren't, people aren't respecting, your second, your third and fourth wide receivers like they were Bateman and Duvernay to start off the year. So you're shifting their attention towards Andrews. And, I wouldn't say that Lamar lost confidence in Andrews, because he was still, their go-to guys in some, when they needed to get a bucket. But when it came down to the red zone area, it's just one of the biggest bugaboos for them, as we all know, was the red zone scoring offense. And when you got a guy like Mark Andrews and Isaiah and another guy like Isaiah Likely, who we're going to get into a little later, it kind of makes no sense to me that you wouldn't just, I'm not saying they throw fades because we're not, Ravens aren't a big fade route team, but, mm-hmm. More jump ball opportunities. And then something I think is going to change going forward, just because they have these awesome tight ends they have now. But it was really perplexing to me that you didn't see more opportunities for those guys to kind of go up and get it in the end zone.
It'll matter who is at quarterback for that, because Lamar completely changed the red zone offense for this team from a largely fade and zipper team to primarily a Lamar moving laterally along the line of scrimmage and finding a player open on an extension of a play. And that's all his success early on in his career, or a lot of it, was based on exactly that ability to find a space at the right time down there in the red zone.
Yeah, like the touchdown from Isaiah Likely against the Buccaneers. That was one of those extended play opportunities where he got him in the back of the end zone.
It was. That was a two-man route, a little different, but yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Mark Andrews, obviously we hope for more health out of him. Another guy we need to talk about is Nick Boyle. And, Nick Boyle obviously hung around on this team. I think there were a lot of questions. If you're a Charlie Kolar fan, you probably are not real happy with the fact that Nick Boyle was still taking a spot on the game day roster and that Kolar couldn't take it away from him. I think is probably the thing to be more unhappy about, is that a guy who's fairly limited in terms of what he gives the team, few snaps offensively, never had above 16 in a game. I think he had 60 snaps the whole season for the Ravens offensively.
61. Yeah. I'm looking at BFR right now.
There you go. And so he couldn't, the fact that Kolar couldn't take that guy's job away is bothersome.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. I don't know if the coaching staff didn't exactly trust Kolar just yet, or didn't necessarily like what they were seeing in practice, or they really that much. I mean, I'd hate to think that they valued the special teams value of Nick Boyle so much to the point where they, I won't say stunt the growth, but delay the growth of this rookie just for the sake of having Nick Boyle out there for, I think he was out there for 108 special team snaps. So he's out there for almost twice as many special team snaps as offensive snaps. With to me, it wasn't really worth it,
Even 108 is not that many. I mean, if you're Malik Harrison, I'd like to know what Malik Harrison played in terms of offense, in terms of special team snaps. I'll look it up. Or Geno Stone would probably be a better one, because he's on all their special teams units pretty much. Those guys play a lot more special teams snaps in a single season than Boyle did. 320 for Stone. So it's hard to imagine a guy who plays a third of the special team snaps is taking, a spot from a first round tight end, where you're desperate not to lose the year developmentally. You already lost a lot to injury, and then you come back and he can't win his way onto the field.
Yeah, like I said, I you know, I kind of feel bad for Nick, because, you know, it's such like a fall from grace from a player that was so integral to their success for a number of years prior to his gruesome injury. And it really kind of just like derailed his career to an extent. And I wouldn't say spelled the end of his time with the Ravens, because they, you know, they'd bring him back on the practice squad. But, you know, he went from being, you know, a key cog to a non-factor pretty much. And the emergence of a guy like Josh Oliver, who the Ravens even said on multiple occasions, you know, earned his spot on the roster and earned a role in the offense, that he kind of usurped his role as the de facto blocking tight end.
You know, that's a great point, is that Oliver is the anti-Kolar in that sense, is that Oliver just won the job away and couldn't be moved off the roster. But one of the really big surprises of the Ravens this year, on cut down day, there was nobody I was more surprised of than Oliver making this roster.
Yeah, I mean, like, he showed a little bit in the preseason, but I just didn't, like, given the roster crunch when I did my numbers and did my predictions and all that, I mean, I just didn't see a way that they would keep that many tight ends, and then that he would be that one of those guys. But like I said, they must have seen more than we did, you know, given that they see him in practice and everything. And, you know, he actually did have a pretty decent year. You know, given all this, he made more contributions in the passing game than I feel like Nick Boyle would have or could have.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's he made a broad set of contributions, because good special teams player. They need him there. He's the team's best blocking tight end, probably. Andrews is also quite good. Likely is good. They're all good, frankly. But I would have said that Oliver probably is the best of that group right now. And he earned that inline role. Once you've got that, those are actually the guys who can be harder to find than the receivers. That's why Boyle, you know, had as much leash as he did here in terms of you know, still hanging around for a long time. If you look at Oliver, his first two seasons, one was at Jacksonville. He had 2.5 yards per target. It's not going to keep you around the NFL. The Ravens acquired him 4.4 yards per target in 21, which is why we thought, hey, that's a guy who'll be gone. Actually improved to 6 yards per target. Now, I'm not going to claim that's a good number, because it's not. It's a bad number still. Mm-hmm. But when you go with all the other things he did, he's providing the offense a little bit. He did certainly provide a few big plays this year. And, you know, 26 catches on 46 targets is not a great catch percentage, but he did, you know, with the blocking contributions and special teams contributions he makes, I think he's a kind of a key player for the Ravens to make a decision on for 23.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing about it is he shouldn't cost that much given – you know, given that, you know, like his production and, you know, he's like I said, coming off his fourth season in the league, and it's been his best year, but it's not, you know, best year compared to his own standards, not compared to, you know, a guy like Mark Andrews or anything like that. So he wouldn't command the most. I think some teams that might be interested in him are teams, you know, like in like the Shanahan offenses. I could definitely see him getting picked up by a team like, I mean, two guys on the 2022 Ravens that could definitely see on the 2023 Niners is a guy like a Josh Oliver and a guy like a Justice Hill. These guys who I feel like will really fit their scheme and the things that they like to do with their tight ends and running backs.
Yeah, that's very astute. I would agree with that. I think, you know, the Jets are a team that might want him. Now, Douglas doesn't have the kind of connection with Oliver, but there's still a lot of coaching connections between those two organizations that might allow that to happen. And the biggest likelihood is if Greg Roman is an offensive coordinator in the NFL level for a different team this year, which is altogether possible, you know, another team, you want your run game fixed, he's your guy. Yeah. Then, you know, they Josh Oliver could well end up there as a guy that, you know, Roman knows, he understands his scheme, he'll bring in, he'll teach everybody else. You know, I think he's earned himself a much longer career with this fourth season. This could have been it. He could have been cut, banged around on somebody's practice squad, basically said, you know what, this just isn't working out, and been done with it after four seasons here. And now it looks like, I look at his career, blocking tight ends are kind of players who tend to last a little longer than you expect them to. You know, guys who can always find a role in 12 personnel. Guys who can run block and who can pass block a little bit are not that easy to find. I just think Josh Oliver could be one of these. If he stays with the Ravens, he could be a perpetual 2-year deal guy with, you know, vet minimum plus $200,000 to $400,000 of signing bonus each time. You know, it won't be a lot of money, but, you know, hey, who among us is making $1 million a year? This is a good opportunity. And you know, those NFL benefits, that package is unbelievable, by the way. If you've ever looked through it, I, you know, I know what my own benefits are, and corporations across America are basically trying to strip a lot of benefits out of most things. You work in print, you probably know that that a lot of that is going on, but it's going on with pensions, with health insurance, retiree health, all these kind of things. The NFL has an absolutely monstrous positive package for their players, and that's one of the really nice things about it. Obviously, there's some injury risk, and there's other things that that you know, you're taking some chances with your body, and in particular with your head in some cases. But there is a big payoff for it.
Yeah, that's why those guys fight so hard to stay around and hang around for as long as possible, because your coverage depends on how much time you got invested in the league. So the longer you stick around, whether it's, you know, as a vetman guy or practice squad guy or a perpetual 1 to 2 year deal kind of guy, the better off you're going to be down the road, because you can't pay for you can't find that kind of awesome coverage. Believe me, I know. As somebody who works in journalism, my benefits aren't like, I have a great job, but I don't have the best benefits. I got to come out of pocket $1,400 for this doula for my wife for our third child that we're about to have, and it's not great.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but congratulations on the third child. So that's at least good.
Yep.
We talk a little bit later, maybe about predict a little bit about where we expect Josh Oliver to end up. How about Isaiah Likely? We move on to him, because a guy who certainly looked great in the preseason. They fed the ball through to him an awful lot with the twos and then with the ones in that third game. Looked okay during the regular season, certainly had his receiving moments. The thing that I was really happy with him about was his step forward as a blocker during the year.
Yeah, I mean, he showed strides and blocking just in the preseason from one game to the next. And I was very impressed with that. And like he showed a more well-rounded skill set than I thought he would have this soon in his career coming into the league. He was one of the guys that I studied in the pre-draft process. Him and Kohler, but especially him, he was a guy I really liked coming out of Coastal Carolina. I just thought he was just gonna be that guy that was always either in the slot or split out wide. But to see him take as significant of strides as a blocker this soon in his career, like the strides I feel like he made in year one, Andrews didn't make till like year two, year three. And
as a blocker.
And I was really happy to see him do that.
Yeah, I agree. Likely really was looking a little lost. A lot of the Ravens rookies kind of looked a little lost to start the season. Kyle Hamilton obviously really struggled to start the year against Miami with some really poor play. But Likely had holding penalties galore. So he had some in the preseason, he had some to start the season, and he was on the field then after a while only as a kind of a designated receiver, which really means he's just coming in more as a second tight end on more obvious passing downs. And the Ravens had many more passes on the plays he was in than runs. Some people would say it's a tell. It really was more like a down and distance condition. So if you say, you know, it's third and eight, you know, it's going to be a pass. And Isaiah Likely is on the field. That's probably not the primary indicator. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Likely is, it's the third and eight is more of it. So, yeah. Other things from Likely that you saw, maybe some of his receiving things.
Man, I thought, like, after what we saw in the preseason, I thought it was going to be, you know, Gronk and Aaron Hernandez 2.0, man, to start this season. And then when he I saw a bunch of people were talking about, you should start him in fantasy, and he's going to be a dark horse candidate for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I wasn't going that far with my predictions and projections for him, but I did think he'd be a lot more consistent piece of the offense as a rookie. And it seemed like the only time he got, you know, consistent involvement and consistent targets was when Mark was either injured or out of the lineup entirely. And so I would have liked to see them, utilize him more in a passing game. Cause that's, as a pass catcher, man, a lot of the stuff he showed in the preseason, he showed at times, you know, in the regular season, as far as yards after catch, you know, finding the soft spots in zone, knowing where to sit, being very quarterback friendly, and just being hard to tackle in the open field. I mean, he didn't show too much elusiveness as he did in the preseason, but as far as like breaking tackles and shedding defenders and picking up more yards after catch, I was very impressed with what he showed in limited opportunities as a rookie.
Yeah, I was too. I thought that, you know, your expectations always have to be muted for a rookie. I do think there are issues. I think he had issues with drops that need to be addressed. There are probably technical things about being a tight end in being a move tight end that he could have done better. But I, basically speaking, I thought his development as a blocker was good enough that you know, Ravens fans should be very happy and have a very positive up green arrow into 2023 on what to expect from Isaiah Likely. There's no part of his game right now that I'm truly upset about outside of the drops. And, you know, again, that it should be something that is correctable, you know, given, I think, what we've seen so far.
Yeah, most of those were like concentration drops where he kind of took the ball, took his eye off the ball before securing it, and he was already thinking about getting upfield and making the first guy miss. So those kind of things are always correctable. It's the ones where the guys that go straight through his hands and bounce off his face mask, those are the ones that I worry about.
For guys catches that, it too close to the body kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly, like a body catcher. Yeah. That's when I kind of get concerned for guys not catching with his hands. His drops are more of like a focused concentration drops more so than a lack of hands or lack of talent.
The Ravens haven't really had like kind of a ball surrounder at tight end in recent years that I can think of. You know, there've been times where I think Nick Boyle has done it to positive effect, but most of the time they don't kind of surround the ball. The guy, you know, as a receiver in Ravens history, who definitely is a ball surrounder is Jacoby Jones. That ball was always in danger of hitting his helmet or his shoulder pad or something else before it got to his hands. And even on the Mile High Miracle, a lot of people said
he caught it.
He fair caught a punt. That's exactly what he did, you know. So there you go. That's it's good to have that. So you know, we'll talk a little bit maybe about what to expect out of Likely in 2023. But I thought one of the really good things was his snaps were up to, I think it's 461 for the year. Let me go to my list here. 438 snaps for the season. So that includes the penalties. So it's you know, maybe a little bit higher than you might hear him counted normally, but it's you know, a broadly solid year, and I think there's some good potential growth still there. Needs to get the connection with Lamar, and I think he'll have that opportunity next year.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the future of Isaiah Likely. Just three more years of cost control for this guy like this, and paired with a quarterback like Lamar who loves throwing across the middle of the field and to his tight ends, especially. I'm super excited about. So I think he'll take a. I would say like, you know, like explosive step as far as like, you know, a huge jump in production next year. But I could like, how many yards did he finish with this year? I think he finished with 373 receiving yards. I could easily see him, you know, pushing 500, if not more.
You may see your coworkers cracking open a can in your 9 a.m. stand-up meeting, but it's most likely not beer. It's a New Mountain spring water called Liquid Death. You've heard me talk about this many times. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it'll brutally murder your thirst. Plus, its infinitely recyclable tallboy cans are helping to bring a death to plastic bottles. Did you know plastic's not even really recyclable anymore? It ends up just going to a landfill because it's not profitable to recycle. Meanwhile, aluminum is recyclable and profitable for recycling facilities. You guys know how much I love Liquid Death. It's in everything I do. I take it to work. I take it to the ball club. I take it when I'm out with the kids. I got them right here on my desk as I'm recording a podcast. I'm always with it. What's cool now is I'm seeing you guys on Twitter talk about how you're grabbing your cans and going to work. So send me those stories about what you're doing and how you're cracking open a tall boy in odd situations because, hey, it's water. And not only is it water, it's the best water that you can go out there and buy. It's cold. You can drink it with whatever you're doing. So going out there, get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool by going to liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
The total touches are always limited in the Ravens offense. So we'll see what how that offense looks with a new offensive coordinator, but I think it's possible. Certainly, he'll play more games, and 500 is not the kingly sum it was. It's under 30 yards a game now. You need to get there, so it certainly can be done. Definitely.
Yeah, I just think like given like, his presence and Kolar's presence. And potentially Oliver if he's back. I couldn't see Mark pushing for 1,000, and then the next closest tight end getting more than 550 maybe. Just given all the talent that they have, I don't think that they're going to be able to funnel that many passes to their second, number two tight end.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because the Ravens offensively with their run game, Lamar led the team in rushing for the fourth consecutive year. And the 2022 Ravens were also in the top 25 all time in terms of rushing yards in a season, maybe higher than that. And you know, they didn't have anybody among the running backs who really ran for a lot of yards. They had a bunch of 400 to 500 yard guys who basically made up the field after Lamar's 764. That's what I mean when I say there's not a lot of touches to go around is mm-hmm. Lamar touches the ball a fair amount himself. The Ravens want, you know, the running backs to carry a significant burden. They're really committed to rotational running back play. So you don't have anyone who's going to put up Derrick Henry numbers or Jamal Lewis numbers anymore.
Much and, to J.K. Dobbins' chagrin.
Yes, much. To, yeah, there you go. He's talking about it. Anyway, let's move on. Charlie Kolar, we finally got to see a fair amount of him in week 18 versus Cincinnati. Looked very good, I thought, in that game. David Ajabo also got to play, got his sack and a forced fumble, which was really nice to see. Both those guys not losing the year developmentally just means a lot. They're going to go into 2023. They'll have failed in some ways, but they'll just seen what the NFL is like to some way. Not what NFL practice is like, but what the dirty NFL is like, where the other guy is trying to beat you every way he can, is not trying to brother-in-law you, and doesn't have the same care for you not getting injured that they would if it were practice.
Yeah, I mean, for both those guys, really, just seeing them in that last game of the season was just like, I won't say vindicating, but it was just like, okay, this is we got something here. You know, we got something with both of these guys. You know, for both of them to come up with big plays in that game, and you know, Kolar didn't have a huge game as far as like you know final stats wise, but I think like what three of his four catches went for first downs, and then he averaged like over 10 yards of reception, which, you know, given who he had at quarterback,
yeah,
pretty darn impressive. I think it's like first two or three catches went for 14 yards. And like I said, I was just like very pleased with what I saw from him, and like the sample size, it was so tantalizing. We're like, oh wait, I can't wait to see that again next week. And then you didn't get it the next week. So that was a little disappointing for me, just because I really wanted to see him build off of that solid performance the week prior. But we'll have a whole offseason of anticipation waiting to see what these guys can do in 2023.
Yeah, it's interesting who he was competing with for that last spot. And you mentioned James Brochet. I think it might have been David Ajabo he's actually competing for the wild card playoff activation. So they could either have one extra tight end or one extra outside linebacker, but not both. And you know, Ajabo doesn't play special teams. I don't know. I assume Kolar would have had a role on special teams, since tight ends almost always do, but that's the kind of judgment that might have been made going into that wild card game.
Yeah, I'm just I have nothing personal against James Prochet. It's just like the lack of value, consistency that a guy brings on offense. And it's just, man, like if he would have made like one of the two big plays that he whiffed on the last 2 weeks of the season, people would feel like a whole different way about James Prochet. If he would have caught, you know, that ricochet Hail Mary in the back of the end zone, you know, he'd be a Ravens folk hero. You know, or if he would have not went out of bounds voluntarily on that 34 yard, or I think 30 something yard catch and run the week prior, I think that was. I don't know, man. It's just like his tenure in Baltimore has just been plagued by pick sixes that came his way, or just, you know, boneheaded plays where there are penalties or missed opportunities. And it's just man, you kind of feel for the guy, but at the same time, it's like, ooh. We could have used somebody. We could have used somebody else on that roster spot. You kind of feel like it's a waste of a roster spot, because it's not like he even as a punt returner. You know, he didn't. I think the longest return he ever had was like, I don't even think it was like 20 yards.
Okay, even the you bring the interesting point. This is I kind of had lost this from memory, but I thought he had three targets or something in his rookie year, and two of them were pick sixes.
Pick sixes, yeah, both against the Steelers.
The Steelers, yeah, exactly. So. It's just the kind of thing that, yeah, the man is just, it seems to have a black cat cross his path all the time. It's just really bad. All right, let's move on. We need to talk about one more player and how this guy fits into the Ravens offense of the future. Obviously, will tell us a lot about who this next offensive coordinator and what his style is, but Patrick Ricard had another big year. And it's interesting because the Ravens, went out and made a futures deal with Ben Mason again. I don't know what they like about this guy so much from practice, but there is obviously something, even though they don't really want him on the roster and they can't have him make the team. Maybe they want to haze him or something to make up for the fact that he left him for the Patriots in his rookie year. But Ricard, just a one of a kind player in the NFL, still a great run blocker. He was probably a little bit up and down the beginning of the year, but I thought he finished extremely strong as the Ravens were forced into running the ball more and did a very good job leading that effort.
First, I'll touch on the Ben Mason thing. Honestly, at this point, I think he's just injury insurance in case Ricard misses any amount of time or has any kind of offseason surgery like he did last year. And we shouldn't expect anything from Ben Mason outside of a couple of preseason carries, this upcoming fall. But back up to Ricard, man, I mean, I feel like no matter what offense the Ravens, who are the Ravens to hire offensive coordinator, I think Patrick Ricard, is going to be a fixture in his offense no matter what. It's because, like I said, even the beautiful thing about Patrick Ricard is like even like people know, Cam Hayward even said it on the broadcast. I forgot what game they were previewing. I don't know if it was Week 18 or it might have been the playoff game. But he was like, look, 42 is going to take it to wherever the ball goes. Wherever 42 goes, the ball's going. But the fact that he can be that obvious tell of where the ball's going and they can still jam that thing down your throat, right. I mean, that just goes to show you the value of this player. And, he took it even in though it wasn't a huge leap in production, but he's continued to be more involved in the passing game as an underneath pass catcher. I mean, there were some times this year when they dialed up fullback screens to where if he would have got a better ball thrown his way, or if his blockers would have, made their blocks a little better, he would have had even more yards.
I do not think I can blame much of that on the quarterbacks or whatever. I mean, he had 5.7 yards per target this year, and that was by far his career high. His career high average yards per target is 4.5. So basically, anytime Patrick Ricard is running a route, particularly if he's running a route without the thing being disguised or a late release or some other way that they literally need 3 yards on a pass to get get a third and three or a fourth and two kind of thing. I'm not a real big fan of. I don't think it's very tricky. I don't think you really get a lot of value out of it. So occasionally you'll see him, and we all like to see a big man running the football. That's a lot of fun, but let's save it for those third and one plays where he has to take the ball in his belly and jam it through.
Okay, so you didn't like that first and goal play against the Bengals when he tried to throw it out to him in the flat and he kind of I wasn't a fan of it either.
The play I did like, and it just didn't work out, was the tight end screen to Mark Andrews that they had blocked. They had a 2-on-2 blocking over there with, I think it was Powers and Stanley, and they each had their guy. And if they'd each make their block, Andrews is in the end zone easily, but they both whiffed on their block, and they whiffed so badly, it was ugly.
It was like a TFL for like minus like 4 or something like that.
It wasn't. I don't think it was a huge loss on the play. There might have been a loss of 1. There might have even been a gain of 1. It wouldn't surprise me. But it was like at the 5-yard line they started on that play. Might have been. I don't think it was 0 because a 0 would have a direction and a 0 underscore, and I don't remember a 0 underscore in that game on our score sheet. So it was either minus 1 or plus 1, I think. And it's just unfortunate because it looked like it was a touchdown if both those guys had made their block.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, a lot of Ravens fans especially, want to bag on Greg Roman, but I feel like the guy had some pretty creative and intuitive play calls that just weren't executed. I mean, there were times where like things were there, they were open, and it was just like one guy here, one guy there, one missed block here, or one drop pass there, and it took what could have been. I mean, there are plenty of times where he dialed up screen passes to where if a guy just catches the ball, has nothing but green grass in front of him. This is like dating back to last year too. Like Hollywood had plenty of bad drops on screens where he had like 20 yards of open grass in front of him, and he just didn't. Reel in the ball. So I'll cut Greg Roman some slack in the sense that he had some nice plays dialed up and schemed up, and sometimes players just didn't execute.
I think there's multiple reasons why this had to be the end for Roman. I mean, I'll list about three of them right here. The first is that, you know, maybe the Ravens have gained what they can in terms of his input into this. And it now, you know, while he layered on run game concepts, somebody else can now layer on passing game concepts and hopefully still build off what's already there, not give it up completely. I mean, it's a real strength of the Ravens. They have players who know how to do it and take advantage of it. They have an offensive line that's built to do a lot of it. So I hope they won't just throw that away. But number two is that this is not a year coming off a couple of really of disappointing years, not making the playoffs in 21 with a long losing streak at the end, making the playoffs, but even though they played competitively in the game at Cincinnati, you know, this team hoped for more. The fans knew it wasn't going anywhere as soon as Lamar got hurt. All right. But then there obviously was a lot of disappointment with Lamar not being back, not fairly placed on Lamar, but there's a lot of disappointment too, because, hey, we want to have a chance to win. You know, we're fans. What are we going to do? And the third thing the reason I don't think Roman will be back is that Lamar really clearly doesn't want him here. And he's ready to move on. And in order, one of the things they have to do, and they're having to look at all the little things right now, is to include Lamar in the offensive coordinator search. There's a lot of guys involved. They should, you know, if Lamar's out talking to all of them, he may actually grow tired of it before the Ravens do, in a sense. And the Ravens could easily grow tired of it too, because, you know, they might not really want to direct the search in the way Lamar would, yet they really need to do that in order to derive some loyalty value out of Lamar for it, I believe.
Yeah, I definitely believe it was this offense had reached it. I won't say inflection point, but like you said, like they gotten everything they could have gotten out of the Greg Roman led offense. It was just time to evolve. It was time to evolve, become something new, but become something more. You know, become something that they said build off what was already there. And John Harbaugh even said as much. You know, that we're still going to keep a lot of the same stuff. We want somebody to come in here and build off of what we already have, not just tear it up from, you know, from the ground floor. And he said that in his season-ending press conference that Lamar would be involved and have some input in, you know, who's going to be the next offensive coordinator. It's because, you know, he's the quarterback. He's the face of the franchise. He's the guy that's going to have a personal and good working relationship with the next play caller. You're not just going to bring in the guy and just tell Lamar, you know, this is the guy who we want to run our offense, deal with it. Because then, you know, you will have to deal with having a new quarterback in 2025.
There you go. Yeah, if I don't think it will take that long either, honestly. If Lamar's on the franchise tag and has to play on the franchise tag, part of it, I don't think Lamar is now thinking, boy, I ought to bet on myself, play another season tagged, but not under a long-term contract. I think he wants a long-term contract now. If the Ravens don't want to give it to him, he's really should be in a different place in terms of, look, I've been injured 2 years in a row. I really need to be serious about this being my one opportunity for an enormous payday. And then maybe there's another part of it that says, hey, what's the difference between $100 million the rest of his career and $400 million the rest of his career? They're both enormous numbers, you know? And this is an interesting puzzle, by the way, Josh. Let me toss this out there for you. And in terms of risk aversion, this is how I used to try and explain what insurance companies do to kids who might want to get into the actuarial profession. But we're going to have a game, and I'm going to offer you two choices. You can either have a dollar, or, and that's a sure thing, or you can roll one die, one six-sided die. If you roll a six, you get $1,000. Which of those sides would you take?
I'm taking a dollar.
You want the dollar, not the roll for $1,000?
No, man, because what if I don't roll it out? Land on, you said a six-sided die, and I got to land on one particular one to get that $1,000?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to take a dollar.
Oh, one-sixth of $1,000, about $167, so of expected value. So I've asked kids, no one has ever taken your side of it. One math teacher did. She should not be teaching math. That's all I can say about it. It's an expected value question. But anyway, the answer is supposed to be that, you know, if most people would take the roll for $1,000, because it's just a dollar is only a dollar. It's just not enough money to care about.
But if I was a kid, because if I was a kid, I'm taking a dollar from a grown man with my own job and stuff like that, and I can have a chance to win $1,000. Yeah, I'll take that role. I thought you meant like as a kid, like I'm taking a dollar. Go give me some candy.
Well, you know, I don't know which kids you know we're talking to, but a lot of kids we go to would have been like in high school and probably Everybody there doesn't think much of the value of a dollar. Let's just put it that way. when the second choice, though, is let's raise the stakes of that game by $1 million. And this is where the insurance company comes into play. And now you can have $1 million guaranteed. And I'm giving the offer of this to Josh Reed. You can have $1 million guaranteed, or you can have a 1/6 chance of $1 billion. Ooh. Which of those do you want?
1/6 of $1 billion. I'll probably still take that million.
Okay. The million is I think what most people, their answer flips to more risk aversion once you raise the stakes by $1 million. And I hope you're playing along out there, people who are listening, but that's the idea. But insurance companies exist because there's large bets to be made in the world. They know how to share that risk and trade it around if they need to. And it's okay. They can take a lot of those individual risks, whereas individual people don't want to take a lot of those risks. And that's kind of the idea. Now, relating this back to Lamar's contract, Lamar, you know, if he was truly risk averse, you know, he might want to completely lock it in. It might be actually the opposite. If he doesn't really care that much about earning 100 or 400 million, well, then he can go ahead and make the bet on himself. It's not that huge a bet if your utility for that money does not change too much between one and 400 million. He may be able to say, people, they honestly do graduate to a new income level very easily. And people say, oh, wow, if I had that money, I wouldn't even know what to do with it. No, you would. You just have that kind of money for a couple of years and you'd figure out how to spend it. The risk is you might figure out how to spend more. Not that you wouldn't figure out how to spend up to your limit.
Yeah, people can miss me with that whole money doesn't buy happiness. I believe that money cannot buy you happiness, but it can buy you the opportunities to be happy. Like if you feel like in doing a certain activity, but oh man, I can't afford to go skydiving or go to Dubai or go to Fiji. But you know what can get you those opportunities? More money. So like the whole thing about money doesn't buy happiness, money can buy you the opportunity to be happy. So yeah. Listen with that.
Yeah, lots of choices. You get more choices with money, which is a nice thing in you know, in real life. But anyway, I we certainly hope Lamar gets paid, but I hope he kind of has a more predictable relationship to risk than he has in the last year that this contract could have been certainly dealt with. We're going to see other contracts get signed. Burrow and Herbert are going to get their deals. It may even influence how much Lamar gets paid, or it may not, because you know those guys haven't had the same kind of injury history so far that Lamar has.
And that's the thing that's like I want to say keeps me up at night, Ken, but something that I really worry about. They're like, okay, what if Burrow and Herbert get paid, because odds are, like after seeing what the Ravens are doing with Lamar Jackson, I think that as soon as the season's over for the Bengals, that they're gonna try their hardest to get Burrow locked up. And my thing is like, okay, if Burrow and Herbert both get paid before Lamar, and it's like the cool one thing is, okay, if they both get paid and neither one of them get fully guaranteed, all right, we're still cooking with some grease here. But if one or both of them get paid and their deal is fully guaranteed, you could still make an argument for Lamar getting paid more than Herbert, just because Herbert hasn't done nearly as much as Lamar, as much as people would like to bloviate about him on social media. But with the whole Burrow thing, it's different though, man. This is a guy who's been to two straight AFC conference title games, won the division two times in a row. Granted, he has better weapons and stuff like that. But that whole argument about who's done more, like what's the value of an MVP versus a guy's been to a Pro Bowl and been to two Super Bowls potentially. So that's the thing that, like, man, if Burrow and Herbert get paid before Lamar, it could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing.
Yeah, it will be one of the really difficult things, because Lamar's won an MVP, and Burrow, if he loses this game to the Chiefs, I mean, that's not a real black mark on his
Two conference title games.
Of course. I mean, I think it would be difficult for the Ravens to justify paying Lamar as much money as Burrow gets. Now, one of the reasons why they might is Lamar is a lot longer along the track in terms of years of service. And in this particular case, it will help him because he's closer to free agency, whereas Burrow just finishing year three, they've still got it. That's right. Right. This is year three. Burrow. Yeah. So they're just picking up the year five option effectively. They really are getting him signed off to avoid future stress over the contract. But that fourth year, you know, he will make considerably less money, I would expect, than Lamar Jackson will over the next 5 years playing in the NFL. So his contract will probably, you know, have to reflect that just because the Bengals have current frictions and advantages in terms of negotiating with him for the fourth and fifth year not being nearly as well paid. Lamar's already past that fifth year. Now he's into the real gravy years of two times tagging and then a long contract.
Yeah, I was hoping that, you know, the Patrick Mahomes contract, I wouldn't say would you know, I just like at the time of signing, I was like, okay, bet nobody's going to be able to argue they should be paid more than or as much as Patrick Mahomes. But that's not how the quarterback market works. It's not about, you know who deserves to be paid more than this guy or next. It's all about the next guy and the inflation of the quarterback salaries. And, you know, along with the proliferation of the salary cap. So, yeah, as much as we want to say, like, oh, this person doesn't deserve to get paid more than Patrick Mahomes, been to five straight AFC title games, well, it's not about whether he deserves or whose resume at the end of the day. It's about the position and where it's going. And so, like, you know, like, just because he signed this deal back in, was it 2020 or 2021, when he signed that $500 million deal, you know, like, and then the length, I view his contract the same way I view it, like the Tyron Smith contract for the Cowboys back in the day, 10-year contract. You sign a guy to that long of a contract, you can always be able to finagle it down the road, and you can always just like tack on more dummy years and stretch that cap space. So it allows you, like, and that's the thing that bothers me about Lamar's deal and some of the things that happened here, and it's that, you know, he doesn't really necessarily want like a long-term deal because he wants to be able to get another bite at the apple. Well, that's going to prohibit your team from being able to surround you with some of the best talent outside of, you know, shortchanging you other places. We've seen what's happened to you with the subpar offensive line. It doesn't look good. So, you know, you're always going to want your team because your team, you know, you can always, you know, invest in offensive line and you know, wide receiver, other, you know, tertiary, you know, position groups. So it's going to be a, except he's really going to have to look at himself in the mirror and look at, you know, sit down with his team, look, all right, you know, what's going to be not just best for me for long-term financial security, but best for this team so that we're all set up for success for the long term. Because the AFC is not getting easier. You know, it's only going to get harder. And like I said, like you have teams like a quarterback like Burrow can definitely, like, you know, navigate not having the best offensive line. I'm not saying Lamar Jackson can't do that, but, you know, he's better with a better offensive line.
And there's definitely some things we say because he drives the running game, you know, he's obviously going to be much better with a good offensive line. Okay, we need to call it here, but really want to thank you for coming on, Josh, and talking tight ends with us, even though we got it all along Lamar Jackson conversation. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Oh, you can always talk football with me on Twitter at JoshReed907. I usually say 907. That's because I'm from Alaska. But you could also read some of my stuff for heavy on Ravens. That's where all my Ravens content can be found. And I'm always available. The lines are always open.
All right. Outstanding stuff. If you're out there and you'd like to do a film study short this offseason, hit me up with a DM. They're always open on Twitter. But I'd love to hear from you. The new series I'm doing is called That One Play. And pick one play in Ravens history. We'll talk about it together and try to make it 15, 20 minute, really bite-sized episodes that will be shorter content that people like. There's people out there producing 3-minute podcasts. We should certainly be able to produce one in 15 if we really put our minds to it. But come at it from whatever angle you like in terms of why that play was special to you. It was my first game. It was the most exciting game I've ever been to. I was there for some different reason, or I watched on TV because of X, or I was at the field level and I saw this kind of thing. Whatever reason it was special to you, whether you think it was some important historical moment for the Ravens, I want to hear about it. We've got a bunch of them scheduled already. It's not like every good play in Ravens history is gone by any stretch, but some of the good ones are gone. The more kind of obscure the play is, the better. Hit me up again. And I'll get back to you very quickly and we'll get scheduled. Josh, thanks again for coming on. Always a pleasure to talk football with you.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.